And now, the Memory Health Show, brought to you by Suvenade. Go to memorydrink.com.au for a free sample.
Yeah, this is fascinating what we're about to do, because the question about Alzheimer's disease and going along to a GP, because really, I think a lot of men are reluctant to go along. Sometimes you're a bit scared to go and ask the question, but your GP should be your first point of call. Damien Flanagan is a GP. I'll call him Doc, actually. He's with us tonight. Hello, Damien. Doc, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, John. How are you?
Good. So as a GP, so I go along to you and I say, look, I'm forgetting my keys, I've got a problem. Or it might be, I mean, and this is a good question, I guess, because maybe I've got a relative who I'm worried about. Did they go? Do I go? How do we deal with that first point of contact?
Oh, look, there's lots of different ways that might happen, John. Look, occasionally it is the patient themselves that has the concern, but often it is a third party. It could be a carer, it could be a daughter, it could be a spouse. And to be honest, sometimes it's even my staff might say, look, they're a little bit worried about so-and-so because of the way they're parking, or that they've cancelled their appointments many times or forgotten appointments. So lots of different ways that a patient may make me think about the diagnosis of potential Alzheimer's disease.
So what do you look for? Someone comes in and, you know, they've got a few concerns. So what questions would you ask? Because you've got to be very careful, don't you, and be very sensitive about it.
Look, it is a sensitive area, and you certainly don't want to launch into sort of accusing them of having a dementing type process. But so the first thing you want to talk about is, you know, how's your memory? Are you having any problems with your day-to-day memory? Are you forgetting things? Is there anything that you're missing commonly? So it's a conversation that's very gently approached. And once you've sort of started to formalize in your own brain that it might be an issue of cognitive impairment, you then start to ask more deeper questions, and probably then you'd even decide to do a formal test. And that test, John's called a mini mental state examination that our clinic staff do it. Normally the practice nurse will do a test like that.
Are people reluctant, scared? Because
absolutely.
I would say.
Yeah, and look, I've often had thoughts myself, golly, I hope I'm not getting dementia when I forget something. But it's a very common scenario. No one wants Alzheimer's disease. I mean, everyone's had an auntie or a relative or a friend that's gotten Alzheimer's, and they know the effects of it. So it's a very concerning thing for the patient, and also for the carer, when that potential diagnosis is sort of being mooted.
Okay, so you do the test, and is that going to give you a sign and what happens after that?
Yeah, look, there's no perfect test. The mini mental state exam's a test that's out of 30. And if the patient gets a score that's sort of 24 or less, it's usually obvious that there is a cognitive impairment problem. But the issue, John, is sort of those greyer areas when the test's scores come back where they're only mildly impaired. They might get a 27 or a 28 or a 29 out of 30. So they've only missed a couple of things on the testing. That's when it sort of comes a little bit more of a clinical acumen on the part of the GP to know whether or not there could be a cognitive impairment occurring. I mean, a patient might miss out on a few things in the tests because of lots of other reasons, and those reasons might be that they've got some language impairment due to being an overseas person, or they may have some visual or hearing impairment. So lots of things could alter that particular test and give an apparent score that makes us think of a cognitive impairment. The grey ones, though, John, are the difficult ones, the ones that only miss a couple of points on the mini mental state examination.
Okay, so you've got someone, let's say, all right, we know what would happen with someone who's scored not very well, but someone's in the grey area. You say to them, look, there could be an issue here. You then refer all of them, I assume, to a specialist. Is that what you do then?
Look, no, you don't need to do that straight away. I mean, remembering with a potential cognitive impairment problem, you've got a fair amount of time. It's not a life and death type of thing. So it might take a couple of appointments where you might want to sort it out. I mean, the big masquerades of dementia can be depression and also delirium. So you've also got to make sure that the patient in front of you has not got either of those two things. Now, delirium can be caused by other medications, and depression, of course, is fairly prevalent as well in our society. So if you feel that depression's an issue, it could be masquerading initially as dementia. So once we can exclude delirium and depression, you might want to then start some investigations that may help you work out further. And those investigations are blood tests and also a CT scan of the brain just to make give you a further bit of information. Now, of course, referring to a specialist is often what GPs will do, particularly if there's some ambiguity about the diagnosis or the patient's particularly young. You might want to get a specialist involved. But if the patient's sort of 75 plus, often the general practitioners will manage the initial stages of the dementia themselves.
Yeah, and you're talking about blood tests and CT scans. So what would they show? Where do they take you?
Yeah, look, there are some reversible causes of cognitive impairment. It might be that they've got deficiencies in various vitamins, or they might have a thyroid problem. Or you might find, unfortunately, that on the CT scan there is some other nasty diagnosis. There might be a brain growth of some sort that needs attention. But, you know, more often than not, when you are investigating a patient that might have dementia, those tests usually come back as being fairly normal. So that doesn't help you too much, but at least you've excluded things that you might be able to reverse or even fix.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is sponsored by Suvenaid, and we're going to talk about it in a moment because it is about essentially about nutrition. But that broader question of nutrition, which feeds into this, because we're still trying to learn what this is all about, aren't we? And what we eat and how we fuel our brain and the rest of our bodies.
Absolutely. Look, nutrition is a huge part. And as we're talking about the early onset of dementia, or sometimes we call it the prodromal phase of Alzheimer's disease, there's lots of risk factors that we need to look at and modify. And, you know, the classic risk factors that you have for heart disease or stroke, things like smoking, high alcohol intake, lack of exercise, obesity, high cholesterol, maybe their diabetes is out of whack, and also high blood pressure. So once you get those things sorted, and if you can modify those things, nutrition's another important thing to look at as well, because there's a lot of people, unfortunately, out there whose diet is very, very poor.
Yeah, I had some conversations on air about the ongoing arguments in the football community about concussion and the effect on the brain, and a few people ringing up about hydration and whether you drink enough water to keep your body going, and that I'm imagining that would be an issue as well, wouldn't it?
Look, with some people, yeah, there's definitely a minimum amount you probably should be drinking daily for all of us, and that's probably at least about 1,500 mils, but most people are probably easily going over that. But you'd be surprised that there are a lot of camels out there, and they're probably only drinking up to a litre per day, behind what is probably expected.
Yeah. Do you suspect that there's a large number of people who are afraid, maybe people living alone, people who are in isolation, or people who just do not want to know about it? They're so frightened.
Look, absolutely. A lot of patients will come in, patients that you've known for a long time, you've been treating them for lots of other diseases, and they don't mention that they're having issues with cognition. And it's, as I said before, it's often a third party that will let you know about it and make you start to investigate it, because they're concerned themselves about the consequences of what might occur from their dementia. You know, everyone's worried about loss of dignity or going into a nursing home or having to be cared for. And that's the reason why a lot of people will hide it for probably, unfortunately, sometimes too long.
Yeah. So we talk about dementia, Alzheimer's. Does it progress and affect people in different ways, at different speeds, with different intensity?
Yeah, look, absolutely. As you know, dementia is sort of an overarching term, and Alzheimer's is one type of dementia. There's also another common one called vascular dementia. And, you know, the various rates of decline can vary. Your average Alzheimer's disease patient might decline over a period of 6 to 10 years, whereas a vascular dementia patient, it might be a lot quicker than that. And there are some other very specific types of dementia which GPs don't get to deal with very often, and they're things like Lewy body disease and Pick's disease, which are very specific types of dementias, which usually are in the hands of the specialists.
Yeah, the beauty of your work, I imagine, is as treatments come to hand for various conditions, you can have that joyful moment of saying, well, actually, there's something we can do for you. But in this area, you've got to say, well, there is no cure. That's tough, isn't it?
Well, look, it is tough. And, you know, there's a lot of diseases like that unfortunately we still can't really change. We can modify them quite dramatically. And I suppose with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, there are some things that can slow the progression of the disease so that the decline isn't as fast as it would normally be if it was left alone. So I think one of the important things or messages for everybody out there in the community, is that if you do feel that you've got Alzheimer's disease or any memory impairment, to get a GP to assess you, because there are lots of things that could help to slow down that progression. And rather than taking 5 or 10 years, it might take 20 or 30 years. And that can make a lot of difference, particularly if the person's, you know, in their 50s or 60s, but even in the 70s and 80s, it can make your activities of daily living be much more enjoyable for a lot longer period of time.
All right, I want to just take a break and we'll come back, because I just want to go through with you just what treatments are available and what can be done, because I wasn't aware of this. I did this when Steve was away a few weeks ago. So I'm really interested on behalf of our listeners. So we're going to go through some of this in just one moment. It is the Memory Health Show here at 12 and a half minutes to 10. Yeah, the Memory Health Show here on 3AW, 2GB, 4BC, 2CC, and stations up and down the East Coast. We are joined by Damien Flanagan, who is a GP, and he's giving us a bit of a tour of the situation as regards dementia, Alzheimer's, and in particular what you can do to treat it. And those people who, mild cognitive impairment and mild Alzheimer's disease, largely the same thing, but this is the start of the pathway, isn't it?
It is indeed, and it's the one that's probably the challenge to recognise it and to get it early, John.
So once that starts, so you've gone through the process, you've gone to your GP, you've said, look, you've got an issue here, and you've confirmed it through blood tests and CT scans. So they say, well, you can't cure it, but then I'm assuming you explain to people what I've heard you explain and before. This is the synapse in the brain, which is the thing that runs the thing, like the spark plug.
Absolutely. The synapses are the junctions between all the nerve cells. So all the nerve cells talk to each other via this junction, which is called a synapse. And in early Alzheimer's disease, those synapses unfortunately start to disappear. There's not as many of them. So the cells aren't talking to each other as much as they normally would. And that's why the memory starts to disappear, and eventually why the function starts to disappear, because if you like, the wiring of the brain starts to deteriorate. And you've got to remember that there are probably billions and billions of these synapses in our brains. And if we're losing millions of them, that's got to affect some part of the function of the brain. We see that in memory first off, usually, but then other functions start to drop away as well.
Okay, so then you've got Suvinaid, which we're talking about, which, and I'm reading here, the components of neuronal membrane, omega-3 UMP choline. So they then, you then put those into the system. Is that how it works with Suvinaid?
Yeah, definitely. Those three compounds that you've mentioned are really the building blocks which help make the synapses. So if you're not getting enough of that, or you're deficient in those three products, it's thought that certainly you can't rebuild those synapses as fast as you would ordinarily do it. And you've got to remember, though, that synapses aren't a static thing. We are often making new ones all the time as we lay down memory, and some are disappearing. But to keep a good brain function, we've got to keep making new synapses. And with those three particular products you mentioned, UMP, choline, and omega-3 fatty acids, they help us to build new synapses and therefore new memories and new cognitive function.
Okay, so you take the Suvinaid does that, and then beside the synapse, you've got other things that it does as well?
Yes. I mean, there's other things within Suvinaid which help promote that function. They're often called cofactors. So there's a pathway in the body which actually leads to the formation of those phospholipids which make up the membrane of those synapses, and that's called the Kennedy pathway. And if you have the right ingredients, the Kennedy pathway works efficiently, and you build good, healthy synapses, and so you maintain good cognitive function. Now, unfortunately, as you age, your ability to get those products into your body through your nutrition can be certainly impaired. And the beauty of Suvinaid is it gives a sort of a little power pack of those three products so that you can get that into your system and make those synapses and hopefully slow down the decline of Alzheimer's disease. Yeah, that's what the studies have started to show.
Yeah, which is what we talked about earlier, the nutrition, so the atrophy of the hippocampus. I mean, again, this is part of the brain.
Yeah, the hippocampus is the part of the brain which we think is involved mostly with memory. And they have done studies that show that the hippocampus decreases in size in patients that get Alzheimer's disease. And one of the studies that was done with Suvinaid has actually shown that there's a decrease in that rate of decline in the hippocampus on patients that have been using Suvonate. And that's a study that lasted for 2 years. But the interesting thing about that study is it's now been going for 3 years and further data has come out, which I believe is even more promising.
Okay, but and it is for people who have been diagnosed with the early stages, is that right?
Particularly the early stages, yeah, absolutely, because I think we can do the most benefit with foods that have a special medical purpose, like Suvonate. The best you can do is with the patients with the early stages. Unfortunately, it hasn't really been studied with those with severe Alzheimer's disease, but certainly the studies have mainly been with the early stages of Alzheimer's disease.
All right, and I see, look, people can get it from the pharmacy, and you can also go to Nutritia Direct on 1-800-319-420, and there's a website, memorydrink.com.au as well.
Yeah, and probably there's a lot of GPs out there that may have samples in their cupboards as well if they feel that they have an appropriate patient to start it on.
Okay, and look, if you know someone, we've had a long discussion here, which I think has really given us a good picture, and if you've heard this and you haven't heard about this before, then go to your GP or perhaps have that gentle conversation with someone, get them to go to the GP. That's important because the sooner you can go, the better, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you've got to remember, too, that there's no harm from this particular product because it is based out of food, of course.
Yep. All right. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much. That's been very interesting. And I know we're doing this on a regular basis. I've certainly learnt a lot tonight. So, Damien Flanagan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Damien Flanagan, GP, and that's the Memory Health Show. And it's now 3:30 to 10.